There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
Our subscribers and members of our listening audience.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I won't be joined by Steve Faub. He's on a baseball vacation. I'll be joined instead by Nasser Hamid. This is podcast number 284, June 18th, 2008. Nass?
This edition of F1 Weekly Podcast is brought to you by Yahoo Ads. From Bernie's household appliances to Super Aguri's finances. Click on them. You know you want to.
Thank you, Nass. And of course, we thank Yahoo Ads. On today's show, au revoir to Le Grand Prix de France. Australia stays on the calendar. Fernando does the tango. And Flavio Briatore ties the knot. And also a quick reminder, two interview goodie bags later on in the show, of course, brought to you by Nasser, and we'll introduce those interviews later on in the program. So there you have it. Steve is out. Nass is in. Nass, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Very good, sir. Thank you. Hello to everybody. And racing regards, of course, as always. How is Mr. Rogers doing?
Mr. Rogers is fine, and I'm glad you could make it here earlier. No red carpet this time because you're in Steve Faub's shoes.
Just click and I'm here.
That's what I thought. Keep up the good work, Nass. Okay, let's go right to it. Manicourt in a few days. Could be the last French Grand Prix, according to Bernie Eccleston. I'm going to sort of get into it a little bit more. Your reaction and hopes?
Well, I definitely would like to see a Grand Prix in France next year. Where it will happen, who knows. I personally don't think it's going to happen in downtown Paris. Okay. But I have to say, I was watching the Le Mans 24-hour race coverage, and that is one machismo track for a Formula One race. But because of high speeds there, there's no way Formula One will go there. But, you know, they also have a, what they call the Le Mans Bugatti circuit, and just with the name and the location, and it's not too far from Paris, that might be a good... And they've held the French Grand Prix once before there, so and they do the French... MotoGP race there and the DTM race. So I would like, you know, French Grand Prix at Le Mans would make a big statement.
It would make a big statement, not only with the history. I mean, that place, I did watch a lot of hours of Le Mans over the weekend. It was fun to watch. I enjoyed watching the Peugeots, the Audis, and everybody else. Of course, Mr. Pescarolo hanging out, still looking pretty ship-shape. I'm happy for him. So that was a great weekend. I'm sure you'll have very good updates for us in the Mundial.
You know, I'll tell you that Peugeot 908 HDI FAP, that thing was flying through Mulsanne, Onoviero, whatever they want to call it. I mean, it was very nice coverage. Some of the aerial shots were beautiful and a great, great sport. I really enjoyed this race because of the intense rivalry. Competition is always good, you know.
I absolutely agree, and I enjoyed it as well. And I thought Jacques Villeneuve did a pretty good job. Ricardo Zonta did a good job. Christian Kleen made a few mistakes, but at least he showed up. And all in all, it was a great race.
Talking of Christian Kleen, I was frankly surprised that BMW, he's a test driver with them, right?
Still.
Yeah, I was surprised that they would let him go and drive for a rival team because you know how, you know, these territorial teams
are. I understand that, yeah. But also, it's such an experience. Fairly removed from Formula One, it certainly couldn't hurt anybody, especially when you're young.
Yeah, well, you know, I'll tell you what happened some years ago with J.J. Leto. You remember him, right?
Of course.
Now, I'm not sure whether he was under contract to BMW or Mercedes, but between these two teams, he had a contract with one of them, and he signed a deal to do the Le Mans with the other, German make, and the team that had his contract released him right away.
Yeah.
So these things can bite you sometimes very badly. But I'm sure he approached the right people, you know.
Of course.
Got the all clearances.
Of course. And BMW, they're civilized. So there you have it. But speaking of Jacques Villeneuve, it was interesting now that he did a really good job, not winning, of course, and second's never good enough at Le Mans. But I like how the press came out and interviewed him quite a bit. He was hounded by the press at Le Mans. And, of course, it came out that he still has hopes to come back in Formula One.
Well, so does Yuji Ide.
Yeah. And, but isn't Yuji Ide a little younger than Jacques Villeneuve?
Yeah, and also a little slower also. No, I was very surprised to hear that comment from... I mean, it's one thing to have hopes of Formula One. You know, I have hopes and dreams for a lot of things too. But you got to be realistic. That's not going to happen for him.
I agree. And he did have to admit that NASCAR is still his number one priority.
Well, there you go.
So there you have it. Yeah. So that pretty much wraps up Villeneuve for me and in the file cabinet.
No, I would love to see him win the Le Mans because actually I was rooting, hoping that he would win because it would have been great for Peugeot and for the sport. And then it would have made him, you know, only guy apart from Graham Hill to be world champion, Indy champion, and Le Mans winner.
And I think he will eventually.
Yeah, that package, that car was flying, I'm telling you.
And I'm hoping that they get back next year and work out some of the bugs, but just terrific race.
Well, the bugs were in the clouds this time. That's what did them in.
Well, and it's rained 10 out of the last 14 years.
Yeah.
So it's pretty hard. It's just that part of France. It's always going to have a little bit of rain, and Le Mans seems to attract it. Some kind of microclimate. Real quickly, Yarno Trulli out visiting the NASCAR circuit.
Good for him.
Yeah, pretty exciting. I mean, it was David Coulthard a couple of weeks ago. Now it's Yarno Trulli. It's the older guys. Have you noticed that?
Yeah, but how old are they? In their mid to late 30s?
Yeah, mid-30s.
Yeah, that's spring chicken for NASCAR.
Yeah, that's the beginning right there.
Exactly.
Yeah, so good for Yarno Trulli. He's thinking ahead a little while. Maybe he could sponsor his own car.
Oh, yeah.
A Fiat Punto.
Oh, yeah. That would look very good. A Panda would look even better.
Absolutely.
In the NASCAR series.
Absolutely. Okay, let's go to Manicool. Very big race for Renault, obviously, home race. They always want to impress the big boss and the fans because they have a big fan base in France, including moi.
And moi is not even there,
no.
At least physically.
Yes, no, I'm there spiritually, of course, the most important part. But Piquet, once again, I have to bring him up. He's got to perform here. This is a good track. It's a smooth track. He's got to pick up the pace.
I think he did pretty decent in the recent testing, which was last week.
He did.
Yeah, and again, you know, we at F1 Week do not wish anybody ill will. What's going to happen is going to happen, but I just think that the difference in times would be even greater when they go to these fast European circuits, Manicur, Silverstone, Hockenheim. And I hope he needs to be at least within half a second of Alonso, and then of course not spin and finish the race.
Absolutely, and I expect Fernando to be on the second row again. They've put a lot of development in the R28. I know there's talk about them dropping that and focusing on 2009. I'm a little disappointed with Fernando always thinking, you know, do I need to switch teams already? That's the part of Fernando I really don't like too much because I think you should stick with your team and be a little bit more loyal, especially when they sign the big paychecks. But...
Oh, gee, the last man standing in the Fernando Club is walking towards the door now?
No, I would never do that because I'll be Fernando, you know, the King Fernando for a long time to come because I like his driving style. But I do, you know, I think it's in bad taste when you start. I mean, we're not even mid-season.
But realistically, you know, not that I want to come to his defenses. We don't know if he really said these things. You know,
that's true.
There's always comments
taken
coming
out
in.
Of context.
Yeah.
You're right.
Yeah. So I think he's going to slug it out with Renault at least for this year and next year, and I'm disappointed as a racing fan.
Okay, enough Fernando. Let's go right to BMW. They already have stated that they're going to be strong here. Kubica's on a roll. He's got to be on a high, and he's probably thinking about winning this race. But Felipe Massa is thinking about winning this race, or Rubens Barrichello is thinking about winning this race. Your thoughts on BMW this weekend? What do they need to do to keep the momentum going?
Well, keep doing what they've been doing. They've been very reliable, consistent. But I will be very surprised if the race is not won by Ferrari. And I think it's time for the snooze button to go on Mr. Raikkonen's alarm clock.
Yeah. Well, they're not in Monaco. Even Canada has got a lot of glamour. Now they're out in cow country. Red Bull is against the law. They don't have that much to do, so I think Raikkonen will be able to focus a little bit more.
Well, yeah, you know, he's now, what, third in the championship?
Right.
Okay, so he really needs to get going, and I think he will. But I'll be very surprised if it's not a Ferrari 1-2.
Okay. I will be surprised if it's a... I don't think Ferrari's going to win this race. I think they're losing their game. Just the fact that they have a Italian TV crew filming BMW tells me there's something wrong in Italy. That during the Schumacher years, the Ross Brawn years, I don't think I've ever heard of something like that happening. Something Italian is going on at Ferrari. And that's serious business.
Okay, so who do you think is... Let me. The question is, who do you think is going to win the race? I think I'm already hearing the answer.
No, I wouldn't say that. Because
you
I don't
wouldn't?
Think, who?
Muy Macho Hombre
no.
de España.
And Muy Macho Hombre de España is not going to win this race unless it rains. No, I think Robert Kubica has got a good chance of getting this race.
No. You know, things had to happen for them to win a race with the package they have right now, which is very good, but just a little short of McLaren, I think, and Ferrari also. So it will be between Ferrari and McLaren. My money would be on Ferrari, I think. And then, you know, Kubica should not have a problem being on the podium.
Very true. Let's go to Lewis Hamilton. He has got a 10-spot grid penalty because of the mistake he made in the paddock or in the pits a couple of weeks ago. He's already saying that he can still win this race. That's how confident he is. It's starting to remind me of a certain football player that said he's going to win the game, and it gets you in big trouble.
Well, you know, technically anybody can win the race. I mean, it can happen. But with the 10-grid penalty and how hard it is to pass, it's not going to happen for him. Under normal racing conditions, I don't think that's going to happen for him.
Okay, but
he should not have a problem getting into the top 4 or 5. I mean, that should not be a problem. But, you know, cars are so reliable these days. So if you
That is yeah. the biggest point. They are so reliable. I mean, we don't see the Kablamos that we used to see just a couple of years ago.
Oh, yeah.
The Hondas are even reliable now.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of the fun out. No more wham-bam. I don't like it.
Yeah, I'd like to see a good race finish from your other homeboy, Sebastian Bourdais and Sebastian Vettel. That would be good, too.
Well, there's the other team that is always having, if one succeeds, the other one fails completely and miserably. I'd like to see both of them finish.
Yeah.
Not necessarily in the points, but like Bourdais said, sometimes being 12th is even better than winning.
What time is that?
Well, I don't know, but I think he had a point. Just maybe finishing the race is it. Well, you know, you can't forget that Toro Rosso is still, even though it's the RB4, or no, I guess that would be the. I don't even know what they call the car, but I haven't seen any improvement from the new car that they introduced in Monaco to what they had a few months ago. The pace seems exactly the same to me, and they have good drivers.
Yeah, when you know when Berger is trying to sell his team, people are asking, does it come with fries?
Wow.
Because that's where the sizzle is with Toro Rosso.
Yeah, I don't think the sale of the team is affecting the way the team is managed and run right now. That's pretty much on the back burner. And I hope they find somebody good for it.
Well, have you heard about this news item came just, I think, today or yesterday? That Honda may start a second team now with Ken Anderson, who used to be an engineer.
I did hear that.
What's going on there?
Which made no sense at all, because Nick Frye, who was against Super Aguri in the first place because he thought that that was splitting the focus, that they were spreading themselves out too thin, this goes against everything that I've read in the past. So, no, I don't believe a word of it.
See, this is the problem with the Honda program right now and also Toyota. There's too much distraction going on. And it's just not like a very intense focus program. And Honda is my favorite team, as you know. And I would love to see them just concentrate on getting back, you know, in the top of the league. But they, you know, both of them have, you know, you are not truly coming here to a NASCAR race. You know, one marketing stunt after another.
I agree. But the other thing is, the B-team concept is dead.
Yeah.
I mean, one of the reasons why Toro Rosso will be sold, but they still have the capability, the old Minardi capability of building their own chassis. So they don't have the big problem that a B-team would have. I mean, it's just too much trouble.
Yeah.
And once again, you'll get Frank Williams in an uproar and ready to take you to court. So, I mean, it's just not worth it. So before we go to break for Motorsports Mondial, real quickly, you think Ferrari's going to win this race?
Yes, sir. Just my humble opinion.
Okay. And I'm not going to say Fernando.
Or should I say it's my prancing opinion?
Well, good for you. At least we're going to France. Unfortunately, we have bad TV coverage again.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. I know. I hate to bring the negative.
You can watch the race live in Cambodia, but not here. That's pretty sad. And they're going to do this for another race also. Now, let me ask you a question. Are you going to follow the race live on Formula One website, or are you just going to suffer and wait?
I can't suffer. I can't wait.
You're going to do that?
Yeah, and as a matter of fact, I'm putting... I know somebody had a link where we could stream it. Now, some of these websites, you have to have a UK IP, but I'm going to try to stream it somehow. I've got to see it live, and I want to smell the cow manure while the cars are racing.
Digitally, huh?
Digitally, of course.
That's good. Digital dung, huh?
It's beautiful. It's modern. So anyway, we'll take a quick break, and we'll be back after this brief message.
F1Weekly.com would like to thank our sponsor, San Jose Label Inc. San Jose Label is a custom manufacturer of labels that makes a variety of products. 1-4 color process labels, alphanumeric barcoding and UPC labels, blank labels, serialized asset tags, hazardous labels, bumper stickers, pin feed, static cling, hot stamp labels, and many others. Please go to www.sanjoselabel.com for info, samples requests, and graphic design. Or you can call to telephone 408-436-8221. San Jose Label is the one-stop shop for all your labeling needs.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now we're going to spin the globe and go around the world with the king of Karachi himself.
Sous le ciel de Paris s'envole une chanson. Elle est née d'aujourd'hui dans le cœur d'un garçon.
The Swami of Motorsports News, Mr. Nasser Hamid. Nass, welcome back to the studio. I hope your dinner was a sweet one.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And as always, I'll start by saying greetings and racing regards to all from Laguna Seca to Le Mans. And you know, John Surtees got an honor. You've been calling me King of Karachi. I have a title for you also. The Duke of Dijon-Prenois.
Oh, that's wonderful. Thank you very much. I'm going to have my little crest made and put on my pocket.
Yeah, make sure there is like a yellow car, you know, touching wheels with the red.
Exactly, car. Exactly. And lots of shouting.
Exactly. He's on, he's off. Anyhow, news came out that the Australian Grand Prix will go on for five more years. Then the news came out that, oh, wait a minute, that was too fast. It must be at night. They're saying it will be at 5 p.m. local time. I mean, they are willing to accommodate that will go to 5 p.m. local time, you know, Australian time.
Right.
Which would be enough time for Tricky Dicky to be out of his pajamas by then. Do you think it's going to happen or what?
I think it is going to happen. I think it's an important race. They have the fan base. Australia has been with us for a long time, either at Adelaide or Melbourne. And I need my Australian fix every year. I like it at the beginning of the season, and the news is till 2015, so I'm very happy.
Me too. Plus the race in Australia, Malaysia, Japan, we can get to see a day earlier on Saturday evening.
Exactly.
So I'm always looking forward to these races.
Yep.
Anyhow, major event took place, obviously, the 76th running of Le Mans in your fantasy land.
I've
taped quite a bit of this, and I've been watching since then. It's a very good show, I must say. Did you enjoy the festivities?
I did enjoy it.
Even though people did not win.
Yes, I enjoyed it tremendously until the 18th hour when Peugeot, of course, the rain affected. They started falling back. And Villeneuve said it, you know, really best when he said, Christensen is unbelievable in the wet. I remember him when I was in F3000 or whatever he said. But he said, you know, once Christensen is in the wet, we are in trouble. And it's going to be hard to keep up with him. And he was correct.
Yeah, the Peugeot line was roaring and qualifying, took the top three starting positions.
That start was absolutely glorious.
Yes, it was very nice. And Stéphane Sarrazin's pole-winning time, I heard, was more than 7 seconds faster than his own pole time from last year. I got to say this, Peugeot, you know, 908 HDI FAP, this sucker was flying through the Mulsanne straight. It looked great. And there was some very good photography, pan shots, aerial shots, and very nice location, I must say. So I enjoyed it very much. But unfortunately for them and for Clark Rogers, the Parisian clouds rained on Peugeot's parade, and any advantage they had was washed away in wet weather. Inexperience, mistakes by drivers towards the end, and some bizarre tire strategy all played in favor of Audi, allowing, like you said, Danish driver Tom Christensen to score his 8th overall win in this great race. Very, very impressive to win 8 times in this day and age. It was 3rd victory for teammate Dindo Capello, who was from Italy, and 2nd for the 3rd man on the team, Alan McNish from Scotland, and we interviewed Alan McNish last year. This is Audi's 8th win in 9 years, and you know they own the Bentley brand also, so they want the Bentley also, so they are doing very good.
Very serious business.
Yeah. Jawohl. Jacques Villeneuve came very close to becoming the only driver apart from Graham Hill to win Le Mans Formula One Championship and Indy 500, but had to settle for second place with fellow Peugeot pilots Nicolas Minassian, who used to race here in IRL with Chip Ganassi, and Mr. Marc Genet. And did you see Genet's accident in practice earlier in the week?
Unbelievable.
That was very scary, and he said he thought he was going to die when the car took off. But good that he's okay and racing.
And he did a good job.
Yes, he did. They were followed by the... And he's Ferrari test driver?
Test driver for, Mark Genet.
So once again, maybe Jean Todt made a call to Ferrari.
He's driving because Jean Todt still has ties to Peugeot.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah.
He was head honcho to both of them at one time. Okay, they were followed by the sister car of F1 Rejects, Frank Montani, Ricardo Zonta, and Christian Kleen. And you know what I like about these names? Quite a few of these people we have interviewed.
Exactly.
So
it's interesting, huh?
So I'm feeling attached to Le Mans.
I thought about that too, and it was that F1 Weekly movement is continuing, and now it's spreading.
Wonderful. And there were 3 Peugeots. How do you pronounce his name? Is it Peugeot? I mean, people are sending emails to Speed TV during the broadcast. Hey,
it's
get the
Peugeot.
Okay, senor. Okay, there were 3 Peugeots in the top 5. And another name from the past, winning name, Ix, returned to the race. Vanina Ix, daughter of 6-time winner Jackie Ix, was 11th in a Pescarolo Jerk. You know, this really kind of touched me as in my motor sport spirit. Audi team, did you hear after the race they invited all members of Peugeot team to their VIP enclosure and gave them a big round of applause, which I thought was very classy.
It is classy and very tasteful, and because they know the amount of work that goes into preparing for Le Mans.
And beating somebody on their home ground is not a very nice thing to do.
It is.
But it's racing and competition.
It's tough.
Yeah, it is. Didn't Alonso go through that in the 100th French Grand Prix, right?
Yeah.
When they had the 100th Grand Prix in 2006?
I believe so.
So sad. But life goes on, and sun came up again for him. Okay, one can only hope that these two teams will battle again next year, because I really enjoyed this year's race very much. I watch every year, obviously, but this time I paid a lot of attention. I was really glued to my sofa and watching with intensity. And I had you on my mind, you know, when they were screwing up on the tire strategy.
I know.
I said, Clark Rogers must be throwing a tantrum now.
I'm sure you looked at that picture you have of me that right there on the television.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And all on 4 walls also. Okay, where are we now? Audi's Le Mans car is a marvelous piece of machinery, and I saw this machine at Laguna Seca last year. It really is a very nice car, but the 908 Peugeot is also very good looking. Unfortunately, Moi has not seen this car in person, even though they came to the U.S. with the Sebring race. And you know what I did find interesting about the Peugeot cars? Their cars had different color stripes at the front. The leading car had blue, and they've really done a very good job, very impressive car. And the old car they had in the early 90s, which also won when Mr. Todd was the head honcho there, that was a very good-looking car. So we've had some very good-looking cars in sports car racing over the years, 917 being one of them. Okay, let's look at some of the class winners. LMP2 winners were the Dutch trio of Jos Verstappen, Jeroen Bleekemolen, and their sponsor-slash-employer and teammate, Mr. Van Merkstein, in their Porsche RS Spyder. In GT1, winners were David Brabham, of course, son of Jack Brabham, Sir Jack Brabham, Antonio Garcia and Darren Turner in their Aston Martin DBR9 from the David Richards stable over the Corvette of Johnny O'Connell, Jan Magnussen, and Ron Fellows. GT2 winners were Mika Salo, Jamie Mello from Brazil, and Gian Maria Bruni, who used to be in GP2. And he drove some races in Formula 1 also, if I'm not mistaken. And they were driving a Ferrari F430 GT entered by the Risi Competizione from Texas. World Rally Championship from Turkey. Mikko Hirvonen leads a Ford 1-2 to reclaim lead in the championship. Jari Matti Latvala was second with Loeb third in his Citroën. Teammate Danny Sordo was fourth. And I understand you have a big update from one of
us. We'll have a more in-depth update on the WRC from
our
friend.
More dirt on the rally.
More dirt on the rally from our friend Jay Streets.
Good, good. Next round in the World Rally Championship will start on August 1, Rally of Finland. Now we go to, this was very interesting news, World Touring Car Championship from Brno in Czech Republic. First pole position for Alex Zanardi since 1997, which he converted to his third victory in World Touring Car Championship, and this was his first win of the season. Second was Felix Potrero, both were driving BMW 320 SI. Alain Menu was third in a Chevrolet Lacetti. Gabriele Tarquini, who is from Italy, in a Seat Leon won race 2 over Zanardi. Robert Huff in a Chevrolet Lacetti was third, and Tarquini extends his lead in the championship. And next round is on July 13th at Estoril in Portugal, and if Senor Dr. Miguel is going there, we'd like to get an update from him. You know, a personal account of the event.
Of course. I think it's Professor Miguel now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Excuse him, wow. Professor. Okay, now we go to Formula Masters, another new series that's getting very popular. They race in conjunction with the World Touring Car Championship. I think the promoters are the same. Also in action at Brno, race one saw victory for Chris Vandea Drift. Dutch racer born in New Zealand, one-time Formula One hopeful and winner in GP2. Mikhail Emmer Müller was second. And you know, this, I feel sorry for this guy, Michael Emmer Müller. He was doing very good, and I think he won a GP2 race on his debut. Then he had an accident in Bahrain, injured his wrist, and then things have really gone downhill. And he was very competitive in A1 GP, but he kept taking people out, so he got a lot of flack for that. But I hope he's able to sort his career back and climb up, you know. Third was, I love this internationalization, globalization of motor racing. Third was Vladimir Arabadziev of Bulgaria. And this is the first racing driver I know of from Bulgaria.
Don't worry, Bernie will start talking to the Bulgarians.
Yeah, a Grand Prix in Sofia, huh? That's next, I think. In race two, winner was, race two winner was Harald Schlegelmilch from Latvia. No relation to the famous German Formula One photographer, Rainer Schlegelmilch. Chris Vandea Drift leads the championship from Michael Emmer Müller, 34-30. From Formula Masters, we go to another feeder series, German Formula 3 from Hockenheim. Race 1 victory for Sebastian Saavedra, another hot-headed driver from Colombia. And you know, Sebastian Saavedra, if you do a Google on Formula BMW Europe, he was involved, I think it was at Nürburgring, in an incident with another driver, and he basically tried to climb his car over the other guys. And Marco Wittmann, whom I interviewed in April, was telling me that German police when they saw that, they were looking for this guy. So he's really hot-headed, but he's quick.
Okay, second was Johnny Cecotto Jr., son of former motorcycle champion of the same name from Venezuela. Local German driver Kevin Miroka was third. Belgian Frederick Verwisch was the winner in race two. Miroka was second, and Italian Matteo Chinosi third. Next round is on the weekend of August 3rd, the Rizla race day at Assen in Holland. IRL News. They may start the season next year, check this out, from Puebla in Mexico on the oval portion of the track. The road section is used for round of World Touring Car Championship. That'll be something starting a big American series in Mexico. I think they should start the series from Long Beach, which will be very good. That's just my opinion. Now we come to Clark Rogers' favorite series.
Le NASCAR.
Oh, this had serious implications over the weekend. Dale Jr. Division rolls into victory lane at Michigan for the first time in over 75 races. Some are calling it a Danica win as he gambled on fuel mileage. But a win is a win and you take them as they come. This is also his first win with Rick Hendrick's team after leaving the stepmom's team, the Teresa Earnhardt operation, last year. Casey Kane was second in his Dodge and Matt Kenseth third for Ford and Jack Roush. Some names that will be of interest to our listeners from Open Wheel Racing. A.J. Allmendinger, who is from Hollister near where we are, was 19th. Sam Hornish, 22nd. Monty Montoya, 38th. And Dario Franchitti was last in 43rd place. He only completed 30 of 203 laps. Nationwide series, I brought this kid's name because, you know, there are series I don't really follow, but you know what, when you're watching, all these names keep coming up. A name to watch, folks, is Joey Logano. He became the youngest race winner in this series, and this being the Nationwide series, at the age of 18 in a few weeks after winning the race on Sunday at Kentucky Speedway. Win was finger-licking good as it came in only his third start from pole position, and this was his second pole position of the season. He is part of Joe Gibbs' team and may drive the Home Depot car in Sprint Cup next season if Tony Stewart smokes away to another team, which is the hot rumor. Why the giggly smile, Mr. Rogers?
Nothing. I was just looking over some of this information. It's very exciting.
I'm sure. NASCAR excites everybody. You never know when a caution will come out.
Exactly. That's the part I love.
Yeah, and then you have to look for the phantom debris.
But I always prepare for the tar fire.
Very good. Okay, in Meet the Parents segment, we have Flavio getting married in Rome over the past weekend to his latest flame, Elisabetta Gregoracci. Wonder who's saying bravo, bravo now.
I think she was saying bravo, bravo, bravo as she's walking to the bank with her new ATM card.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. American Express, don't leave home without it, huh?
Well, she's very attractive. Flavio is obviously an attractive man to a lot of these beautiful bombshells, so I'm happy for all of them.
Yeah. Flavio's previous flavor of the season have included Naomi Campbell and Heidi Klum. This was the best part. Fernando Alonso drove the newlyweds to the hotel in a Rolls Royce. And my question is, where is the love for Renault? And I say the trio would have looked wonderful in a Clio.
They should have been actually in
Space, Renault Espace.
Yeah, in Espace, that would have been nice. Yeah. You know the Espace F1 that was built by Matra?
Well, I think they designed the car. That was their concept.
Absolutely. Yeah. But there's a Espace F1 with F1 power plant at the Matra Museum in your favorite town, Master.
Romagatin?
Exactly.
Yeah. I would love to go there someday. So did that surprise you?
I was actually stunned. I thought it was untrue. Fernando, the chauffeur...
But no, which was a nice
It is, and not only that, but I'm sure the conversation was interesting, and Flavio has done a lot for Fernando, two world championships, machismo.
Yeah. Okay, now we come to our Barbara Streisand segment.
People who need people.
Okay, Mika in trouble. 20-year-old Mika Maki was involved in a high-speed accident in his native Finlandia. His 350 Nissan Z, or Z in some places, crashed into some metal railings post at the entrance to a tunnel. Some news reports said it was coming out of a tunnel, but apparently it was a high-speed accident. Both him and his passenger escaped serious injuries.
Reports are suggesting he may face both suspension of his driving license and a 2-year jail time. He is currently second in this year's F3 Euro Series with 2 wins. And I have 2 words for young aspiring drivers while they are driving on street. Bertrand Gachot. You know who owes his career to Bertrand Gachot.
Of course.
Yeah. And it's very silly to be doing these things when you have, and he's backed by what you call Red Bull.
It's unfair to your team, your sponsors. Yeah. You have to think a little bit.
Yeah, and you know, I'll tell you, I mean, I was talking to this young American kid, Jonathan Summerton. He's also 30 years old. In this day and age when, you know, the average driver of a race, Formula One driver, is getting young and young, you really have to control yourself because, you know, if you piss off the wrong people, whether it's through an injury from skiing or whatever, or playing tennis on a motorbike, it can pretty much screw up your Formula One career.
and get your team principal not happy with you.
Yes. Okay, John Surtees, only man to win world championships on 2 and 4 wheels, has received an OBE, Order of the British Empire, in the Queen's Birthday Honours List. And John Surtees is a pretty nice guy. I've met him a couple of times. I met him at the
A1GP?
Overly crowded A1GP race at Laguna Seca, and also at the Autosport Show a couple of years ago. Very nice guy, and so congratulations to him. And 3-time World Touring Car Champion Andy Priaulx was also honored with an MBE. And hence, when I read this thing, I said, I got to give Clark a title also, henceforth, the Duke of Dijon-Prenois.
Thank you. Just give me an F1W. That'll work.
Okay, sir. Ron Dennis, not all is lost for McLaren Maverick. Last week, he was awarded the Prince Philip Medal from His Royal Highness, the Duke of Edinburgh, in a ceremony hosted by the Royal Academy of Engineering. In the 1970 British Grand Prix, when Jack Brabham ran out of petrol on the final lap, Ron Dennis was a mechanic on that car. The man has sure come a long way, and we congratulate him on this achievement.
I absolutely congratulate him. Outstanding career, especially from a mechanic. Obviously, there were some moments, the right planets were aligned, right choices were made.
Yeah, but it takes a lot of hard work also.
Oh, absolutely. Indeed. Commitment. I mean, no doubt. He's a hard worker. Ask his ex-wife.
Wow. She whispered something to you? Oh. Another rumor coming out of the McLaren Technology Center. But, there are some people who have issues with them, and you know, that's the way it goes. Finally, some sad news. This was very sad. We interviewed this gentleman last year. Ove Andersen, former rally driver and head of Toyota Formula One program, was killed in a rally accident in South Africa. And this was past week. His co-driver survived. Ove was taking part in the Continental Milligan Vintage Trial, an event for pre-1960 cars. His 1957 Volvo 444 was struck head-on by a lorry. And, he was living, obviously, in Cologne because of the Toyota F1 program. That's where he was living when I spoke to him last year, at the Monterey Historics. And then he had bought some sort of a hotel or resort-type deal in South Africa and moved there. His rallying achievements include victory in the 1971 Monte Carlo Rally driving an Alpine Renault. The following year, he was second with Jean Todt as co-driver. In 1975, he won the Safari Rally at the Villa for Peugeot. And you know, talking of Jean Todt and Ove Andersen, if you do a Google on Kenyan Safari, Eastern African Safari, you can see a Peugeot coming to one of these, time, whatever they're called, checks, and the car stops, and the young Jean Todt in shorts jumps out and gives his papers for stamps and all that. Ove Andersen also raced at Targa Florio, in which he co-drove with Sandro Minardi, another gentleman we interviewed last year, and in the Daytona 24 Hours. He was 70 years old. His son Frederick is an engineer on the Renault F1 team. So that should sum up the Motorsports Mondial. Sorry, it's on a sad note. And after a little break, we will come back with a little histoire of Le Mans 24-hour race.
Well, that's a lot of history.
With your express written consent.
There you have it. We'll be back in 60 seconds.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, before we go into the interviews, we're going to do a brief history on Le Mans, the wonderful racetrack in France.
Yes, sir. Because of time constraint, I just put down a few, you know, tidbits about the history of what has happened there.
Yeah, because it could be like a three-hour show.
Yeah, it could be a 24-hour show. Of course, the race started in 1923. Local drivers André Lagache and René Lenard took the first win in a Chouinard and Walker. I haven't seen those cars ever.
Oh, I love a good old Chouinard and Walker.
Oh, really?
If you go to the Schlumpf Museum in Mulhouse, France.
Well, but Dr. Carey was a listener in San Diego.
Excellent.
Yeah, he sent me some picture. Have you been to that museum?
Twice.
Oh, really? Nice.
Oh, yes. You as soon as you walk up, you kiss the floor, and it's just...
Oh, wow. Very impressive. They covered a distance of just over 1,372 miles. A regular tradition, which, you know, I was talking to David Donahue. He has raced there. He thought this was a very cool idea. He enjoyed it very much. A regular tradition includes a parade of all drivers through the center of the town of Le Mans on Friday before the race. The tradition of champagne spraying was started here by Dan Gurney after winning the race with A.J. Foyt in 1967. Maybe AJ told him, I don't want to drink that foreign stuff.
No, I don't think so.
No, actually,
but it would take an American to take a perfectly good bottle of champagne and shake it up and spray it all over the place, which is a great tradition now.
Yeah, and I read somewhere that what he did actually was he wanted to douse Henry Ford and all his entourage that was there. And I also read that he had given that particular bottle to an American journalist who returned to Gurney, and he now has it at his home in Newport Beach, California.
That's nice.
So that's very nice. And next time I see him, hopefully at the race here, I will ask him about this. The famous sprint to the cars was abandoned after 1969. Eventual winner Jackie Aix walked to his car at the start as a sign of protest. What was happening, you know, some drivers would get in the car and take off and then try to...
put their seatbelt.
Yeah, it was becoming a safety issue. And ironically, a driver by the name of Jonathan Wolff, I believe was the name, was killed on the opening lap of this race in a fiery accident. The 1955 tragedy when the Mercedes of French driver Pierre Levy went into the crowd section after hitting the car of Lance Macklin, you know, over 80 people were killed, including the driver.
Mm-hmm.
And I know two people now personally who were not only at that race, but in that section of the... where the car came.
Yeah.
And I used to work with a gentleman who was at that race, and he even showed me some, you know, scratches.
Some scars. My father was at that race.
Yeah, really? Wow.
That's where I get that.
Really? Wow. Was he anywhere near the crash?
He was just down opposite at the other end of the paddock.
Okay. And you told me you've been to Le Mans as a kid.
As a ute.
Okay. Now we come to, and of course, you know, when this accident happened in 1955, racing was banned all across Europe for a, you know, brief period of time. But the Swiss are still paying the price. And I believe they lifted the ban in racing in Switzerland.
They have lifted the ban in Switzerland.
But now they're running into the problem of, like Neil Johnny said to me, Switzerland is very green. So now they're running into the problem, where are we going to build a track?
Well, there was talk that they were going to build a track at Interlaken because...
Oh, yeah.
Well, there's an abandoned airfield there that is already, you know, good infrastructure, and I've been to a couple of car activities there. The space is there, but like you said, the green, I don't see it happening.
No, I don't think so. They might as well just do that like they did in 82, hold the Swiss Grand Prix at Dijon.
Might as well.
Yeah. Okay, the American assault led by Henry Ford II, who was pissed off at Ferrari for pulling out at the last minute to sell his company to Ford, was victorious 4 years in a row, starting with the controversial win for Chris Amon and Bruce McLaren in the Ford GT40, which I still think is one of the most beautiful cars ever made by a mankind.
You should drive one.
Yeah, well, one more bonus check with those zeros, and
that's
I should
true.
Get me a question for you. What do you think? Do you know about the controversy for the 66 finish? But these two cars, they were trying to do a... Would you like to explain to the listeners?
No, Nast, you're the history man.
On the track, Chris Amon and Bruce McLaren were behind the leading car. Okay, I don't remember the name of the drivers who were there. One of them was the American guy. Just name escapes me right now. But anyway,
your homeboys threw the book at them because they did a dead heat finish like Schumacher did with Barrichello at Indy, and they threw the book at them. The rule was that winner would be the driver, the car that covered the most distance at the end of 24 hours. And since Chris Sammon and Bruce McLaren started, you know, behind the car that was leading, they obviously had covered more distance. So they gave the win to Bruce McLaren and Chris Sammon. And Henry Ford and four people were not happy.
But they got over it.
Yeah, and they won 3 years in a row. You know, Henry Ford, I was reading a book about him some years ago. And, you know, he's the guy who fired Lee Iacocca from Ford Motor
Company.
And it said that what he would do if he would get into a business, if somebody was not seeing eye to eye with him in a business meeting at Ford Motor Company, he would end the conversation by saying, "Oh, my name is on the building."
Well, when your name is on the building, it does give you a bit of clout.
Yeah, so you should put a name here, you know.
But Rogers, then they'll think, Rectory. Well, they'll think I'm selling forklifts or something.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you have that uplifting spirit about you anyway.
That's true.
Okay, your favorite, my favorite also. The Blue Matra won the race with Henri Pescarola 3 years in a row, 72, 73, and 74.
Those were great moments for France.
Yes, they were. And, you know, it was Graham Hill was his teammate one of those years. His car in this year, you saw the Pescarola jar, right?
Yeah.
This is painted pretty much the Matra.
I thought the same thing when I saw the car. It reminded me of the Matra.
Yeah, it has the same little splash of green.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just a little, I don't know, maybe getting old, but it looks like this one is a little bit more darker blue.
Perhaps.
Yeah, but it's pretty much like the old Matra. Peugeot won the race in 1992 and 93 under the dynamic leadership of one and only Jean Todt. Mazda's 1991 victory with Volker Weidler, Johnny Herbert, another guy we have interviewed, and Bertrand Gachot is to this day the only win by a rotary engine and a Japanese manufacturer. Toyota came very close. Remember Martin Brundle was on pole for them one year, but they never won. Last American to win the race was Davy Jones, who was originally from New York, with Manuel Reuter and Alex Wirtz in a Porsche run by Jost Racing. And Jost, Reinhold Jost, used to be a race car driver himself, and the European RD program is run by his team. And this was in 1996. Jean Rondeau, you remember Jean Rondeau?
Mm-hmm.
He won the race in 1980 in his own car. And I'm not sure, but I think it's the only time a guy won a Le Mans in his own vehicle. He was later killed in a road accident at a railway crossing. Okay, Renault won at Le Mans in 1978 with Jean-Pierre Jousseau and Didier Pironi. The greatest distance, 5,335 kilometers, which would be about 2,800 miles, I think.
Something like that.
Covered by a winning car was in 1971 by the Porsche 917 of Dr. Helmut Marko, now the head honcho at Red Bull, and Dutch driver Hees van Lennep, another guy we interviewed here. So there you have a brief histoire of, how do you say Le Mans 24 hours in French? Say that for me, please.
24 heures du Mans. You're welcome, Naz. Thank you. Keep up the good work. And now I want you to introduce these two interviews. Outstanding stuff. Great young drivers, up-and-coming manager, do it.
Okay, this first interview is a young French driver, and he is doing a good job, and has been very successful in junior Formula. Now he is with the ART team, which is co-owned by Mr. Nicolas Tord, Bambino Jean Tord, and I saw him race at Mugello this year in April, and that's where this conversation took place. And his uncle, Lucien Bianchi, was the winner of the, I believe it was the 1968 Le Mans 24-hour race. And this interview was arranged by his manager, Mr. Olivier Mayenhu, who is from France, is now based in Switzerland. And Olivier and I have been business associate for a few years, and I want to thank him for his time. And Olivier will be here in San Francisco in August, so I will hook up with him and have some, you know, pasties. So thanks to Julien Bianchi and Olivier Menu for their time, and hope the listeners enjoy the conversation. Les conversations.
Gentlemen, thank you for joining F1Weekly.com.
Okay, I'm here in Mugello with Jules Bianchi. Jules Bianchi. I'll try again.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm here in Mugello with Jules Bianchi. And Jules, you finished third in the race. Is that correct?
Yep.
Congratulations. First question for you. You are from a racing family. Your grandfather, Mauro, was 3 times champion in GT class, and your uncle, Lucien, was a Le Mans winner. How old were you when you decided to become a professional racing driver?
I was 10 years old, because I was driving a lot of karting. So with my father, we decided to do it.
Did you get any, were the family supportive of your efforts, or did they try to talk you not going into racing?
No, they support me a lot.
Okay. In karting, you were Asia-Pacific champion in 2005, French champion in 2006, and also did very well in Italian and European championships. How is the level of competition in different parts of the world?
It was all the time very good, because in karting, everybody can be fast, and it's more close the time, you know.
Have you ever raced in the United States? We do our program from US.
I don't know it. No, never. Okay.
What are some of your best memories from your karting days?
It's my victory in Asia, in Suzuka.
Any other memories or races that stand out?
Yeah, the World Championship in Braga in 2005, because I started last and I finished fourth.
Now, most of the drivers these days come from karting. Can a person become a good racing driver without going through karting?
I think it's possible, but with karting you can get a lot of experience, so it's very good for get a good driver.
What is the most important thing you learned in karting that you now use in motor racing?
To be ready for professional and to think about all the little things you can do to improve your driving.
Last year you were French Formula Renault champion with 5 wins. Which victory was the best and why?
Was Barcelona, because I really like this track.
Nicolas Todd is now guiding your career. How did you connect with him? How and when?
He contacted me 2 years ago, and we signed a contract 1 year, 1.5 years ago.
What was the biggest difference you felt in driving when you moved from karting to Formula Renault and from Formula Renault to F3 Euro Series?
The difference from karting and Formula Renault is totally different for me, because it's not the same driving. You have to... In cars, you have to think about your driving, and in karting, you just drive. And in Formula 3, it's same like Formula Renault. It's not very different.
Is there a big difference between the car and the handling of Formula 3 and a Formula Renault car?
It's more... it's quite the same.
What goals have you set for yourself for 2008 season?
Sorry?
What goals? What would you like to win or achieve this year?
I want to do all my best. I will do all my best to improve all the time my driving and to be better and better.
Who do you see as your main competitors among the rookies this year? And you are also a rookie in this series this year, right? So who do you think would be the main competitor for being Rookie of the Year?
I think Mika Maki is very fast, so we will see.
How is the relationship between drivers? You know, in F1, nobody talks to each other. Do the drivers in this series talk to each other? Is the atmosphere friendly?
Yes and no. With some driver, yes, and with some other, no.
Can we hear some names where you have friends with and some drivers are not friendly?
I am friend with John Lancaster and all my teammates, but after I cannot say.
Okay, your favorite track and city that racing has taken you? You've been to quite a few places in this world. What track do you like and what city?
I see. I like Mugello.
Looking forward to next year, what is the game plan for 2009?
I don't know. I have to make a good championship this year, and we will think about the future after.
Okay. Felipe Massa is also managed by Nicolas Todd. Has he given you any racing tips or invited you over for pasta?
Yeah, one time in Paul Ricard, I go to see him and he was very friendly.
Okay. And you already told me you have never been to the U.S., but do you follow American racing scene like IndyCars or Le NASCAR?
Yeah, I look sometimes.
Who's your favorite in American racing?
I don't...
Danica Patrick?
Sorry?
Danica Patrick?
Danica Patrick.
She's your favorite? Are you serious?
Yes.
Okay, good. Finally, how about a message for our listeners? And we have listeners in France also. So if you could say a few words in French also, I will appreciate. Anything you want to say to the listeners? Tell them about your website and, you know, anything you want to say. Nice things, you know. Yeah.
If you want to know it, to know me better, you can go on my website. It's
And your website address is?
Is jules-bianchi.com.
Thank you very much. Thank you. And, you know, we'll put your link also and we'll do a nice report.
Okay.
And
thank you.
How about if we do a 5-minute interview with you? Are you available?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. That was fun, huh?
Yeah,
we do brief interviews, you know.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good luck. Okay, we are in Mugello with Mr. Olivier Menhu, and him and I have been emailing each other for a few years now on a different business matter. Olivier, first of all, good to see you. How are you today?
I'm very fine. The race for Jules Bianchi was okay today, so I'm quite happy with the results. And I'm glad to be in Italy with the sun. It's better than in Hockenheim, where the rain was there all the weekend. So, and I'm very happy to meet you finally.
Yeah, same here. Thank you. Now, you are from France, the country that gave the world World Grand Prix, and the first Grand Prix took place there. Tell us about your interest, how you got interested in motor racing, and what are your earliest memories of automobile racing?
I've been interested in racing since I'm young because my father is crazy about racing, especially Formula One. So as soon as I was young, I started to watch the Formula One Grand Prix. At the beginning, I thought it was quite boring because a lot of car on the track, going around the track was not very interesting for me. But time after time, I get interested in the racing and in all the different aspects. So that's why how it comes to me, and I think it's in 1991 that I really started to look carefully at the racing on TV, and especially a yellow car from Benetton with a shark nose, driven by a German driver whose name is Michael Schumacher.
I think I've heard of him.
You know him? Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did quite a lot of good race in his career. So.
Yeah. Okay, now, what was the first motor race you ever went to?
The first motor race I've been to? The first Formula One race I've been to is Indianapolis in 2001. It was just after the attacks in New York, so I was not sure about if the race will go on or not. But it was the first time, and I have to say that I've been very impressed by the track. It's so huge to be there and to see all the straight lines so long, and so many people in the stands. It was a great memory.
Yeah, Indianapolis is very famous for hot dogs. How many hot dogs did you eat that weekend?
Honestly, I think I did not eat any hot dogs, but I remember I ate one part of pizza.
Yeah, the track itself is very nice. They also have a great museum there. Did you get a chance to go there?
I got a chance to go to the museum, and I was very impressed by the cars and the history which is in the museum. But I was also very proud and happy because it was the first time I met F1 engineers who were visiting the museum also, and I get a chance to speak with them, and I was it was like a dream for me to be close to Formula One people. So
who were some of the engineers you met?
It was people from BAR Honda, but I don't know the name. It was, I don't know.
Okay. Now, France has a lot of great tracks. Some of them are not in use, like Reims and Rouen, Clermont-Ferrand, Paul Ricca. Have you been to all the French tracks, and which one do you like? Even those ones who are not in existence now.
I've not been to all French racetracks, but I have to say that three of them are very famous in my heart. I would say I've discovered Dijon-Prenois last year, with Jules Bianchi, who was racing in Formula Renault. And I have to say that it's a great track, full of history. And I like the layout of the track, and Jules did well because he won the race 2 last year. The second track, which is really impressive, is Circuit Paul Ricard in south of France, which is now a test track, of course, but it's so huge what we have done with technology and safety, that it's a great, great racetrack. And the last one, the top in my heart, is the Le Mans racetrack, because I'm in love with Le Mans 24 hours, and this is the best track of the world, I think.
You know what happened at Dijon Prenois in 1979?
I guess, yes. It was a close battle between two cars, a yellow one and a red one, and it was very, very intense.
It's our favorite also. Talking of Le Mans, have you ever been to the Le Mans 24-hour race?
Yes. The first time was in 1989. I was a kid, and it was... I think it's a Mercedes who won this year. I hope I'm not saying any mistakes. And I've been there for 8 times now. Since 2002, I've never missed a race in Le Mans.
I know what you do for a living now. Tell our listeners what you do for a living and where you're living now.
Now I'm living in Geneva in Switzerland. And so I'm working with Nicolas Stud, who is the manager of Felipe Massa at Ferrari, Sébastien Bourdais at the Scuderia Toro Rosso, and so Jules Bianchi, who is driving in Formula 3 Euro Series. And Nicolas is also team manager of ART Grand Prix, which is a 3 Euro Series team and a GP2 team. And things are going quite well because we have encountered success with Felipe this year, with Sébastien, and 2 points in Australia. ART Grand Prix won the GP2 Asia Series, so things are going well, but it's hard work every day.
How long have you been involved in driver management?
It's now 1 year and a half, about. Yeah.
Let me ask you a question, so we understand how this business works. Jules Bianchi is a young driver, obviously Bourdais was very well established. When somebody like Nicolas Todd or people who are in this driver management business, do drivers call them, or do they look out for young talent and go and tap into their, success, try to tap into their success? How does this game is played? Tell us, please.
Both is happening. We, Nicolas and I and people that we know still have an eye on the different championships, karting or Formula Renault or anything else. But some drivers are also contacting us because they want to show us what they are doing, and so we can know about them, so both is happening.
And when you meet young drivers, not like Bourdais or Felipe Massa, who are fairly well established, like Jules, again, as a reference, we all know speed is not the only thing to succeed in motor racing. What is it that you're looking for in a kid, apart from a dad who's very rich?
Yes, as you said, speed is not the only thing which matters for racing. Now, to be a racing driver, you have to be complete. You have to be a nice guy, well, with a good image, and you have to be able to speak different languages. You have to be well trained, physically trained. We are looking at all of that. Speed, of course, is important, and we have to see that the guy wants to succeed in what he's doing. So, we are not looking only at speed, as you said.
The drivers under your management, are they allowed to have a tattoo after they win a race?
Our driver never asked us to have a tattoo, so I don't know yet.
Okay.
Why not?
Okay. Finally, I appreciate your time. How about a message for listeners of F1 Weekly? And tell us about your website also.
Well, thank you for your time for asking me questions. You can visit a great French website, which is also available in English, which is automoto365.com, which is a website about Formula One, rally, and MotoGP. And I thank you very much. Merci beaucoup pour votre attention, et à bientôt sur nos sites.
I'm very pleased to tell you that automoto365.com I visit regularly, and I kid you not.
Great.
Merci beaucoup.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
And now let's go quickly into the wrap-up. And since we don't have Steve, I'll go ahead and take care of the emails. We got a couple of emails, and one is quite wonderful. It goes to Nasser. Hello, Nasser. This is from Mark from Halifax, Nova Scotia. I have been watching F1 coverage from the ITV feed, And as part of the pre-race show, the last 3 weeks and for the next 3 weeks, they have been featuring a segment with Martin Brundle called 60 Years of Silverstone. What they have been doing is taking six F1 cars from the last 6 decades, and Martin has been driving these great cars around the Silverstone track, hence the name 60 Years of Silverstone. The first car he drove was the 58 Maserati 250F. Other segments feature Jim Clark's 67 Lotus 49 and the Emerson Fittipaldi 74 McLaren M23. Each segment is about 5 minutes in length, and so far the first three are available on YouTube. When I watched these, I thought of you, Nasser, and your great historic segments that you do on F1 Weekly. I thought you might like to view these segments and pass this info on to the listeners of F1 Weekly. Search for the 60 Years of Silverstone on YouTube, and you'll find the first three segments. Outstanding. This is great stuff. I wish we got this coverage here in America.
My thanks to Mark, and I responded to his email. Man, I'll tell you, I clicked on this link that he provided on YouTube, and I was just like, I was freeze frame right away. It's just very high quality, and I would highly recommend check it out. And I put this thing on the link on the forum also. So, good job. Yeah, I mean, you know, we only promote what we really like and believe in. So this documentary they're doing is absolutely first class. Thank you, Mark, again.
Okay, here is a WRC update from our listener, Jay Street. Well, the story this weekend is all about tactics and team orders. Unlike F1 team orders, in the WRC are part of the game. Depending on the surface conditions, the first car on the road can be forced to sweep the road of loose gravel, losing time to the cars further down in the field. The championship leading driver is first car on the road on day one. In past years, they would then reverse the order so as not to be overly punitive to the fast cars. This year, however, the rules have changed. The order is never reversed. On the second and third days of the event, the starting order is the finishing order from the previous day. Given the very loose surface of the stages in Turkey, our boy Seb was losing lots of time to the cars further down the field. On the last stage of the day, he was running sixth. This is where the Ford's sheer numbers of team orders and tactics came in. After Seb started the last stage of day one, the four drivers, A-team and B-team and C-team, all got the word to slow down, so much so that Latvala actually stopped on stage, letting the clock run. This is extremely well-orchestrated manner that saw Seb move from sixth to first, but only by 1 second. Not only did five Ford drivers deliberately let the Citroën by them and the leaders board to ensure the Citroën would be sweeping the roads again the following day, they also made sure that the number one Ford driver, Hirvonen, was well back in sixth place, having the cleanest road possible. And I saw a lot of this talked about on the internet. There was a lot of articles about Ford. You know, is this the wrong thing? But they're really following the rules and having them slow down to let Sebastian, I like that term, sweep the road, because in Turkey it was pretty brutal out there. So there you have it. On the final day, the only one who could pull it out would be the man who had to pull it out, Sebastian Loeb. It was not to be. The Fords ran flawlessly, and though Seb came close to moving up to the second spot on the last stage, his Pirelli tires let him down, and he was forced to settle for 1 foot on the box. The Citroëns used to run the Michelins, but this year, WRC is a one-tire spec class. This puts him 3 points down in the championship lead to Mikko Hirvonen and increases Ford's championship lead over Citroën to 9 points. The WRC is now on summer holiday. The action resumes in 7 weeks in the land of 10,000 lakes, Rally of Finlandia. Keep up the good work, Jay. That was in depth. Okay, our final email, and this is very interesting because it's almost like we had an imposter F1 Weekly staff member at the Canadian Grand Prix. But anyway, this is an email from Kim. I had a great time talking to you about my hat at the Montreal Grand Prix. Can you send me a picture of me and my hat? You know, the Ferrari? Kim. Apparently, Kim emailed me about meeting an F1 Weekly staff member at the race. This person took pictures of her with her Ferrari hat and said that she could contact him through F1 Weekly. So whoever it is out there, please send me an email and I will hook you guys up together. You never know. It could work out. So there you have it. That's the email. Real quick, thanks to SFF1, the San Francisco Formula One group. They'll be meeting up again this weekend. And if you want to contact them, go to www.sff1.com or you can call the Overtime Sports Bar and Grill, 398 7th at Harrison in beautiful downtown San Francisco. And you can call at 415-863-1688 if you happen to be in town.
Now, I heard that some group is going to do a NASCAR get-together at the local Hooters.
Yes.
Is that true?
Yes, I heard that's going to be at the Hot Dog Festival in beautiful Downey. We want to mention our MySpace site, myspace.com/F1Weekly. Check us out and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise across the remote with our website or podcast, email us at info@F1Weekly.com. I want to thank everybody who makes this program possible. Good night.
Bye-bye.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. Thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.